I'm going to just talk for about 10 minutes in order to sort of set the stage a little bit, and then I'm going to give way to this really exciting panel of speakers. The panel includes Martha Wilson, who's going to be speaking about the legendary Franklin Furnace, and I'm really excited to be able to welcome her for that. It also includes Yelena Glusman and Matvey Yankelevich speaking about the Emergency Index, which is a brand new publication that will be launched in March, which documents artists' performances in their own words. And I'm also really happy to welcome Krista Holka, who's an American-born, London-based photographer. She's going to be speaking a little bit about her practice and the way that it has intersected with live art and performance art in London and internationally. But before I give the floor over, I just wanted to, I think, sort of propose a set of discussion topics, I suppose. I made some cards. And I'm just going to go through these cards. I'm going to start with resistance, because I think in a lot of ways that's where the discussion about performance and documentation often begins. There's this idea that performance particularly or specifically or singularly resists documentation, and that there's something special about that resistance. So how do you document work that resists documentation? One of the things I'm going to do in the next 10 or 15 minutes is just kind of read out a list of examples and references and things that have been useful for me in my research recently. They might seem either obscure or obvious, depending on where you're coming from, and I'm hoping that that kind of will open up to a larger conversation after I begin. I should say that since I'm based in London and since I've worked and lived in New York for a long time, my reference base definitely skews in that direction, and that I'm sure that that's problematic in many ways, and I really, really welcome corrections and expansion from the audience. Anyhow, resistance. I feel like Alan Capro and Happenings have been a really widely used touchstone as an example of a work that sort of resists documentation. There's this idea that happenings were this thing in the 50s and 60s that happened that you can't really get unless you were there. That the interaction between people in the space were part of what the thing was. That's gone on to resonate, I think, in a lot of other kind of conversations around contemporary art generally. But I think Alan Capra was also interesting because of the influence of this work, or perhaps because of the challenge, attempts to circulate documentation of the work have been made quite a lot in recent years. From the exhibition that's on at the Pace Gallery in Chelsea right now, which is an exhibition of images, texts, and artifacts. It's quite a straightforward exhibition. Which is big, but feels a little bit to me like school. So that's one end of the spectrum, to various kind of reenactments of well-known events, from the Happening Again events at Tate Modern a couple of years ago as part of their Saturday Live program, to Andre Lepecki's ambitious reenactment of 18 happenings in 6 parts in a Queens warehouse in 2007 and elsewhere. So there's the idea that performance or certain types of performance or certain aspects of performance resist documentation, but that idea itself can be compelling. Problematically, though, I think that kind of risks hijacking a larger conversation about documentation. Other interesting questions can be staged that aren't necessarily consumed in this kind of resistance topic, and I want to propose a couple of them. The next sort of topic I want to propose is appropriation, or the appropriate. Using what isn't yours, sampling, but also the way that recent work has reframed this question into a question of sort of outsourcing. The appropriation not just of items like Duchamp's ready-mades, but also of labor. I'm thinking specifically of Nick Rideout, a performance scholar, talks about Rimini Protocol and their Calcutta and Cargo Sophia performances, which take respectively collaborations with call center employees in Calcutta and truck drivers from Bulgaria to create interactive performance events that draw on those kind of labor experiences. Nick Reidert also writes about the Canadian company Mammalian Diving Reflexes, Haircuts by Children, which is what it says on the tin. And all of these kinds of performances sort of appropriate existing kind of activities and expertise in order to create sort of both critical commentary, but also sort of creative events. From appropriation, I want to get into the idea of the imaginary. I'm thinking of, for instance, Waleed Raad's Atlas Group is a really well-known example of a project that constructs fictional documents in order to talk about a very real historical milieu, namely the Lebanese Civil War, Civil Wars in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. I think that that type of practice might find an interesting counterpoint in Allison S.M. Kobayashi's practice. She's here today. She takes sort of existing documents like found letters under a highway overpass in Toronto or a audio cassette from a voice machine found in a thrift store, and she generates kind of fictional or imaginary personae based on these very real documents. So, imaginary. From imaginary, I want to move into the possibility or thinking around reenactment, which I think is a really big, in some ways, sort of too big category for the way that performance history and performance documentation has been approached in recent years. There's the idea, I think, that reenactment is somehow a more authentic or more appropriate response to the preservation of live art, possibly due to the live component of reenactment. But there's often a reinterpretation component to this as well. I'm thinking of the UK-based Performance Reenactment Society, specifically their Untitled Performance Stills, which was presented at the symposium The Pigs of Today Are the Hams of Tomorrow in Plymouth. This kind of performance-coordinated event asked attendees to stage their own memories of performances that they'd seen. These stagings were then photographed by Hugo Glendinning, who's well known for his work with a variety of live artists, particularly in the UK. The reenactment impulse extends beyond the reenactment of performance's own history, of course. I'm thinking specifically of, a number of things, but the exhibition History Will Repeat Itself, Strategies of Reenactment in Contemporary Art at the Kunstwerk Institute for Contemporary Art in Berlin, coordinated a series of projects, among them well-known examples like Jeremy Deller's The Battle of Orgreave, which is a reenactment of a violent confrontation between police and striking mining workers who were on strike in this South Yorkshire town. There's a much written about connection between this art performance historical reenactment and sort of non-art historical performance reenactment. And that connection, I think, has sort of filled with tension and problems, and I think most usefully written about when the kind of the wrongness or trashiness or sort of weirdness of reenactment is kind of celebrated and a kind of thought about as a useful kind of critical technique, as it is, for instance, in Rebecca Schneider's performance, Performing Remains. I want to kind of propose the digital and the kind of wealth of digital archives and digital performance archives that have erupted in recent years, not least the Franklin Furnace digital archive. And I might sort of leave it at that so that Martha can speak to how that has happened. We were talking before the panel, before this event began, about how the body is this sort of ever-present specter of performance art. The one sort of reference that I wanted to throw up is Diana Taylor's The Archive and the Repertoire, Performing Cultural Memory in the Americas, which is an example of performance theory trying to grapple with a spectrum of different types of knowledges. So for Taylor, archival knowledge, or novel knowledge that's documented, preserved, and categorized according to the logic of the archive, has the potential to violently suppress other types of embodied knowledges, which are not coincidentally associated with marginalized and disenfranchised people. For Taylor, her work centers on the post-colonial landscape in Latin America, but I think her framework is useful elsewhere. She dubs the type of knowledge, this sort of embodied knowledge, repertoire, and she argues that there are a set of unspoken rituals, ways of being physically, sort of affective and emotional literacies that are transmitted intergenerationally, but not via archive documents. Liveness. I would feel remiss if I didn't sort of stage the confrontation between Peggy Phelan's argument that performance becomes itself through disappearance, and the rebuttal of that argument by Philip Auslander, who argued that no, it doesn't. I also want to point to the way that that debate has been taken up by Rebecca Schneider in Performance Remains, where she argues that that frustrating the logic of the archive means that letting go of a fetish for liveness, that asserting performance as ontology is disappearance, accepts the archival premise that knowledge is coterminous with what remains, that remains sort of necessarily are equivalent to knowledge. I want to talk for a second about trash, both in terms of archaeology and material remains. I think a really productive interdisciplinary encounter that has been occurring in performance studies is between theater and archaeology, not least in Michael Shanks and Mike Pearson's book, Theater Archaeology. And in the forthcoming Archaeologies of Presence, edited by Gabriella Giannacci, Nick Kay, and Michael Shanks. From garbage, though, I want to go into the idea of trash, and specifically talk about a project that's happening in London right now, the three-year-long project Performance Matters, one strand of which was called Trashing Performance. This is a collaborative research project with Roehampton University, Goldsmiths University, and the Live Art Development Agency in London, which is a really significant, I think, organization for both the preservation but also the sort of support of new types of work in performance. I want to point to a special issue of the Dance Theater Journal, which was edited by PhD students Owen Perry and Joao Florencio. In this special issue, they invited contributors to submit 50 word statements that either trashed performance or were about trash and performance. And I want to read you my statement, which was titled Trash or Evidence. And it read, "Sticky prints everywhere. Not traces, rather great globs of blood, piss, shit, spit. Fewer tears than one might have thought, but sweat in such volumes the body it came off must be dried out husks. They were here. We can prove it." I want to talk for a minute about scores. I think Fluxus scores come to mind most easily and readily. One, I think, quite useful and easily accessible source is there's an ebook collection of Fluxus scores available at performanceresearch.net. It's edited by Ken Friedman, Owen Smith, and Lauren Saukin. The collection includes items like Alison Knowles's famous 1962 proposition, which instructs the reader to, and I quote, "make a salad." It also includes her 1964 variation number one on proposition, which reads, make a soup. I want to think about how the score sort of stages the possibility of repetition with difference, and how it also stages the document as something that has potential for future events, rather than being a sort of retrospective record of a past event. Quickly, I want to talk about history, about how right now there's a sort of there's a particular moment, I think, in performance where the practitioners of performance are being confronted with the fact that performance art has a history, self-consciously. I think that there's something about how the first, or the people who might self-identify as the first generation of performance artists are now entering an institutional canon. There's a lot of, I think, anxiety. Institutional anxiety and sort of disciplinary anxiety around that reality. Identity. In this context, I thought it might be useful to point out the way that performance shares a set of problems around, or a set of kind of concerns, I think might be a better word, around the way that documentation gives voice. But that specifically the flexibility of performance makes it a valuable tool for marginalized and disenfranchised groups. I'm thinking about how the performance artist Holly Hughes talks about the development of the lesbian solo performance genre, and that it's very much conditioned by the lack of rehearsal space and technical equipment in expensive urban cities. There's a specific problem in performance that without documentation, there's a worry that there are gaps in history where this work should be represented. I want to talk about creative documentation and the fact that in the past 4 or 5 years, I've been hired onto a number of publicly funded projects that have a imperative to include a sort of creative documentation team. And what does that mean, and how does that work? There's a group in the UK called Open Dialogues who are specifically exist to think about how writing might interact creatively with performance. There's the idea that that documentation is creative or it produces something new, but also the idea that writing can sit somewhere that is away from a sort of review or critique or evaluative function, but nevertheless manages not to be toothless, that still stages challenging questions. I also want to point to the idea that performance might have a creative relationship to documentation, whereby a performance for documentation becomes kind of an interesting thing. And Krista is a colleague of mine, and we're going to talk a little bit about a project that we staged in a house in Scarborough, which is in North Yorkshire. And this house is sliding off of a cliff and will eventually fall into the sea. And we brought 8 performance artists up to this house to make work kind of in response to the dramatic ephemerality of this situation, but that were for documentation. This publication is on sale at the end of this event. Finally, I want to talk about not documenting. And in order to talk about not documenting, I want to briefly reenact a performance that I did in this space in 2006, which seems like yesterday and a lifetime ago. And it went, an excerpt of this performance went, being a person means having thoughts and feelings and experiences and times that are not shared, that are lost, that are kept to yourself, that are secret. This is a privilege, I think, and it's sad. It's not something that should be mastered or contained or gotten over. Maybe it doesn't even have to be acknowledged. Maybe it goes without saying. The functional response to these gaps is to take what fragments we can find and make something new, something we can share. but I want to try it. I want everyone to spend the next minute not saying anything. And when the minute is over, I'd like you to not ever tell anyone what you thought or felt or did for that minute. We're all going to share the same container, and we're all going to keep the contents to ourselves. Okay, now make a promise to yourself to remember for as long as you can what you thought and felt and did in that minute. And then make another promise to yourself not to tell anyone about it. Thank you.